When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Ho, 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 ho. This one. You guys, Matt Knoll, fellow conspiracy realist. Every so often, some of the craziest conspiracy theories do turn out to be true. Not all of them, and maybe not most of them, but
some of them.
Some of them.
Yeah.
And some of them are in this episode.
Indeed. We always talk about how the concept of a conspiracy theory is like this thought terminating cliche designed to, you know, have whatever topic it's attached to be viewed with skepticism. But oftentimes they're worthy of a little bit more digging. And sometimes when you dig deep enough, you find that grain of truth.
I can't remember which ones exactly are in here, but I can't wait to re-listen and find out.
Yeah, we're right there with you.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. You are you, and you are here. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. As always, we are accompanied by our super producer, Paul Deccant, who we nod to with great gratitude. As always, thanks for saving the show, Paul.
You dropped the mission control.
I feel like, if you want to keep it, you can call him that.
It's a seasonal beast. You bring it out, around the holidays.
We can just call him Mission Critical.
There you go.
His names are Legion.
Paul Big Crit Deccant.
Paul Showsaver Deccant.
Showstopper, even. It's up to you. If he wanted to stop it, all he's got to do is push the button.
That's true. Paul, what we'll do is we'll ask the listeners to submit some nicknames if you're okay with that.
That's great.
Okay.
And then we'll put up a poll on Here's Where It Gets Crazy, the Facebook group, and have people vote on their favorite ones.
Yeah, like Matt, like you and I did with Agent Scully or Alex Bones.
Yeah, that's true. Almost Alex Bones.
Almost Alex Bones. Everything that we just said at the top of the show, folks, turns out to be true. Although they may sound like rumors, we can substantiate all of those things. Speaking of fantastic segues, that's what this episode is about.
That was some segue jitsu right there, man.
It was Matrix level. I'll admit, not my best work. That's true. But this is an important episode, and it's a little bit of a collection, a little bit of a mixtape in the first part of what we are aiming to make a continuing series, conspiracies that turned out to be true. This first part will focus on some of the biggest government-oriented conspiracy theories, that genre of conspiracy theory. And these will be stories that for years or decades were dismissed as absolute tomfoolery, tinfoil hat country, but later turned out to be partially or in several cases entirely true. So while we're focusing on some government conspiracies in this episode, we'd like, as you listen along, to take note take stock of the things that you have read personally and let us know through the various means of contacting us about conspiracies that you found to be absolutely true. They don't have to be government oriented, just anything that was depicted as utter hogwash and later turned out to be absolutely factual.
And yeah, when we say factual, we mean there are some type of documents to back it up. There's some type of acceptance in whatever field or community this thing took place.
What they call in the law enforcement world, an eyeball witness.
Sure, an eyeball witness or corroborating evidence of some sort that, yes, this was true.
Or an eyewit.
Yeah.
Didn't we hear that in an earlier episode? Somebody referred to people as eyewits.
Oh, that's good.
That's the portmanteau for...
I'm all about brevity. It's really the soul of wit.
Or just, you know, wit.
There you go.
That's so bad.
No, that's great. No, we should,
So to do this episode justice, we have to explore a little bit about how conspiracy theories are depicted in your neck of the global woods today. So in many ways, the average English-speaking person is taught a very particular interpretation of the phrase conspiracy theory. And it's an interpretation that is at best disingenuous and at worst purposely misleading. The idea of a conspiracy theory as a term is often conflated with the idea of deception or a delusion or a falsehood. This goes back to the concept of what certain psychologists call a thought-terminating cliche, a buzzword, right? So we see buzzwords in so much of mass media. If you want to find the most succinct way to encapsulate a thought, a phenomenon, or a group, you try to distill it into a single word. That's why people who think there was more to the story about the 9/11 attacks became called truthers. You could just say truthers, and that means whatever you think it means.
And the people that believe President Barack Obama was not of this country originally were called birthers.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great example. And these examples are not just limited to the realm of conspiracy theory. You hear it referred to in so many different ways. Hipsters. What's a hipster, right?
It's like a flannel-wearing, American spirit-smoking, what is it? What are the shoes they wear? What are they?
What's Birkenstocks?
A hipster? No, that's a hippie. Ooh. Hipsters wear like
Toms?
Toms. There you go. Toms wearing, asymmetrical haircut having.
Just the mustache having.
Yep, just the mustache.
I feel like you're describing me, so I really appreciate this.
Well, you're what they call king of the mods.
All right.
It's good to be king, though. So a thought-terminating cliche, the reason this can be dangerous is because in that effort to succinctly describe something, a lot of important stuff gets left out of the conversation. We have discussed in the past how calling the idea that the UK is run by reptilian aliens who eat souls, calling that a conspiracy theory and calling the fact that HSBC laundered money for drug cartels for years a conspiracy theory makes them sound like they're equal when they're clearly not, because one of those things actually happened. It is true.
Well, and it's a tool to smear people whose opinions you do not agree with or are counter to your agenda.
Right.
You label them conspiracy theorists. You equate those two things that you just said or things like that, and then people do the thing that everyone does where you kind of distill everything down and look at that one word and that's my narrative.
Mm-hmm. And we've discussed before that it was designed that way. At least conspiracy theory as a buzzword was designed that way after the JFK assassination for any alternate ideas as to what occurred.
And by gum, we're taking it back.
Right. Yeah.
It's often used to, the term conspiracy theory is often used to dismiss a claim without having to investigate its merit, its authenticity, or importantly, its lack thereof. This bias is something that has crept out of the realm of mass media and intruded academic literature as well. For example, you can easily find multiple studies constructed with the purpose of discovering or manufacturing a link between mental illness and what the study makers call conspiracy theory. And the difficulty here hinges on definition. What makes one thing a conspiracy theory, the way we would understand it in mass discourse, and the other, or another, an out-and-out actual case of people conspiring in secret to do something sketchy? The difference is what's often referred to as a conspiracy theory, and what exists as a legitimate conspiracy often takes a back seat to the exploration of the psychological processes involved as individuals and groups compare, analyze, and prioritize certain forms of evidence. So we have two examples of genres of conspiracies versus genres of conspiracy theory. So let's take one of the most popular out there conspiracy theories around now, just to look at it real quick. That is the flat earth meme.
Otherwise known as earthers.
Otherwise known as earthers, yes. Nice
flat earthers, but I'd like to, you know, in the spirit of brevity, let's call them earthers.
Sure. That's better than flatters.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
It can mean a lot of things.
Yeah.
And you know, Mission Critical P. Deccant actually has a friend who is creating a documentary right now all about flat earth.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talked about maybe having them appear on the show.
Well, we're going to look into it. And much like, you know, the minds of the flatters and the earthers, Paul Deccant is currently absent. So
wait a minute. That was
It took a while to get there.
No, that was worth it. So this idea, this flat earth idea, it fits the general mass media definition of a conspiracy theory. Easily disproven, easily dismissed. There are mountains of evidence, or should we say vast horizons, indicating that Earth, as well as all of the rest of the planets our species has been able to observe, are in fact spherical. This evidence includes astronomical observation. This evidence also includes on-the-ground, easily reproducible experiments that you can do right now in the comfort of your own home.
Sounds like disinformation to me, Ben.
Yeah, right, because the shadow on the moon is a total high production value, David Blaine-esque.
Oh, but dude, was like proof for this or disproof of this before we even had the technology that we have today. I mean, guys like Galileo observed through very simple, comparatively, telescopes and could observe celestial bodies that indicated this was not the case, right?
Yeah, and ancient civilizations also knew the Earth was round. And you could do it today. Even with the technology that they would have had at that time, you can stick a stick in the ground. You can watch the shadow move as time passes. With a little bit of simple math, you know what? Don't even bother with the math. Just get another stick.
Cool.
We matrix dodged that one. All you have to do is get two sticks and then stick them some distance apart and realize that if the Earth were flat, then two sticks in different locations would produce the same shadow. They don't. They never have. They never will. It just doesn't happen because the Earth is not flat.
It sounds like hearsay to me. I don't know.
Matt, you're being such a pill today.
You guys know NASA is controlled just the way all the sticks are working together to try and, you know, fool you.
Don't believe big stick.
You know, my theory is that people that really espouse this belief, it's just like a super, super hipster throwback thing that they're doing. It's like, I want to like live my life like I'm a Cro-Magnon or something.
It's ironic, perhaps, in some way.
Exactly.
And then there is a group, I think we covered this in a previous episode on Flat Earth, there is a group that is arguing it entirely to be pedantic. And their real argument is that one can argue anything effectively if you use the correct rules of rhetoric.
People on the internet being pedantic?
Imagine.
That's insane.
It would be the coolest conspiracy ever, though, if
that
we've
would be
all
so
just
great.
Been living under the guise.
But I've asked this question before, you guys. To what end?
Right.
What is this accomplished? To for whom? Who is getting rich off of this? How is this keeping us in the dark in some way that is actually valuable to literally anyone?
Yeah, so hold on a second, because we get to that. So additionally, the rules of our observable universe seem to be exceedingly consistent in all the proof we have. There is no evidence that any observable planet has been, is, or will be, quote unquote, flat, whatever the hell that is supposed to mean. This is a great example for those of us in the crowd who consider ourselves to be hardcore skeptics. There's nothing that can disprove the notion of a spherical Earth. And to combat this dearth of proof for the idea that Earth is not, in fact, spherical, adherents of this belief system, like the ones who really, really hook, line, and sinker went for it, they're forced to constantly widen the net of perceived collusion. So there's a worldview wherein confirmation bias is king, That means that not only is the bulk of scientific consensus from ancient times to 2018 been a huge consistent snow job, but millions of people across the span of civilization have somehow consistently cooperated in covering up the truth for, as you alluded to earlier, Noel, one reason or another. But that's the final red flag here. Differing camps of flat earth people who really believe in this, people who really advocate for this belief system, still can't agree on exactly why this would happen.
Which is funny because to me, the conspiracy theories, the weird ones, usually flow from some disproportionate thing that people perceive as being wrong, mm-hmm. or like they're looking for a boogeyman to explain a phenomenon or like a an inequality of some kind. Mm-hmm. So there's that is absent here entirely. So what's the reasoning for like seeking out this clearly disprovable way of thinking?
Well, the problem is that most of the academic literature doesn't center on those concepts themselves. They center on the psychological processes of the believers. And that's missing the mark. It's interesting, but it's treating symptoms more so, I would argue. And we have to remember this example, okay? Easily disproven, that's what mass media means when they say a conspiracy theory. This example will come into play later, but let's take another more complicated example for comparison, like secret government programs.
We're familiar with those.
Right.
Really? How familiar?
Well, I mean, they occur all the time, at least throughout history. And our system of allowing documentation to be put out into the public domain after a certain amount of time, it just shows us that there have been rolling secret government projects and programs and experiments and research throughout time.
No doubt.
And they're still going. Yeah. We are within that time bubble before any of this stuff can become public.
Well, it is. It gets stuff that gets declassified. We find out the flavor of the types of secret programs there are. But I just feel like now it's worse than it ever was. Whatever's going on now is mm-hmm. super dark and super weird.
But here's the thing. There are claims, unsubstantiated claims, of even crazier stuff that we don't have documentation for. And that has also existed in time memoriam.
Right. Yeah, yeah. We've got... This is a genre of conspiracy theory, and like you said, Matt, the way it typically happens is that there will be outrageous allegations of illegal conduct. Someone will say, where's the proof? Yeah. Show me the money. There's a lack of hard evidence. That's either due to the classification of documents proving that stuff, or, to be fair, it can also be due to the fact that people who say these things are lying or deluded or... Although I hesitate to use the word, maybe let's not say crazy, maybe let's say extremely misinformed. Mm-hmm. So what happens when this stuff comes true? Like when, as we pointed out, it is declassified, we see a hard reset on the popular narrative when leaked or declassified stuff proves the people who sounded crazy were telling the truth the entire time.
Then everybody says, oh, well, yeah, I mean, obviously we knew that. We just, you know, mm-hmm. whatever.
Everybody knows that. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
And that's my favorite part, that sudden backpedal. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. I knew that was true.
It's not very helpful, though, is it?
No. It's a weird cousin to one of the most unhelpful things you can say in any conversation. I told you so.
That was it. We talked about this the other day. Yeah. Has anyone ever – you said your dad said that to you.
Yeah.
Not to throw your dad under the bus, but that's the worst.
It's just not a – it's not an addition to a conversation.
And it's probably not even true. I'm like, when? When did you tell me so? How did that conversation go? I'm sorry. I'm getting up in arms about
this.
No,
it's true. No,
it's the same.
When people say I told you so, it's like, well, good. I'm glad you're into your earlier statements.
What do you want to talk about now?
Right. So we have to make an important note here too. Recent technological breakthroughs, primarily in the field of communication, have drastically increased the pace at which these types of conspiracies can be confirmed or debunked. And that goes to what you were saying, Matt, about the bubble. The bubble is changing because the average person, if the five of us here in the studio and you listening, were alive in the 1960s, we might have one or two things absolutely confirmed in this genre of secret government programs, and we could easily go to our deathbeds not knowing about the other stuff, just wondering if that weird thing the hippie told us in Haight-Ashbury was true.
You met him too?
Yeah.
He told me a bunch of stuff, man.
He's on one.
He had a lot to say.
And in the 21st century, though, where we live today, it's increasingly easy for a single individual, one person, to play a tremendously important role in history. Someone like an Edward Snowden or a Luis Elizondo can relay classified information of their own accord and share it out with the world before any of the old orthodox suppression methods can be deployed. And that means, if we want to wax a little bit poetic about it, that all of us now have our hands on the lids of innumerable Pandora's jars. And each one of those cannot be closed once it's open. Now we used to have a situation where there would be maybe 5,500 people that knew a secret, right? And several of them die. One of them maybe tries to tell someone and they commit suicide, two shots to the back of their head. They fall off a building. They take a permanent vacation in Mexico. Cyanide tablet under the tongue. But now, if we have 5,500 people have a secret, any one of them can just leak it easily, and it will probably ruin their life, but there's no way to get that information back. And over the past few years, we've often discovered in the course of this show that there is a grain of truth behind some of the strangest sounding fringe theories. In some cases, we found these theories to be more or less absolutely true, such as MKUltra. I don't even think we should spend time on that one today.
Yeah. You don't have to prove or disprove anything. It's just out there.
It happened. It happened. We paid for the government to give people LSD. But the weirdest thing about this is the rabbit hole continues. It's like looking into a fractal. We keep finding more stuff. And we'd like to tell you about some of it after a word from our sponsors.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Here's where it gets crazy.
So we're going to go through and kind of do a roundup of go down a list, in a way, of a couple of these government conspiracies that we found. Remember, we're in the genre of government here. We're not branching out into everything. We'll do that in a later date.
We're going to have ourselves a little conspiracy rodeo.
Yes, that's right. It's conspiracy roundup. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I've been watching a lot of Toy Story 2 lately with my son. Oh, my gosh. Okay. The old prospector is an important character in the second of that
Spoiler
trilogy.
Spoiler alert.
I haven't watched it.
I skipped right to 3.
Oh, man. I'm not kidding.
I haven't seen 2. I've only seen 1 and 3.
I haven't. I saw the first one.
You've seen 2? No, Paul hasn't seen 2 either.
Really?
Mouth conversation. Isn't that funny?
Oh cool. You guys.
Paul, secret ghost Paul said he's seen 1 and 3, but not 2. So hush your mouth, Frederick.
It's too late. You unscrewed the jar. Everyone knows about the prospect.
The badgers are everywhere.
The badgers are out of the bag. It's true. But yeah, okay. So we're gonna intentionally skip some of the things we covered in depth on previous episodes. As you were saying, Matt, this is about the government. One of the maybe we look at this in terms of what it was originally portrayed as and what was actually true about it.
No, that's good.
So okay, so what's our first one?
Our first one has to do, well, let's say the conspiracy theory. If you were walking up on the street and somebody grabbed you by the shirt and said, "Hey, the government is spying on us right now."
You met that guy too.
Yeah,
you met that guy.
Yeah, I met him.
Yeah, originally this was seen as the classic conspiratorial belief. Someone who had maybe read 1984 a few times too many and became paranoid, and they became assured that the government was watching them. This is a complicated thing because paranoia is inherently narcissistic. Paranoia inherently comes from the axiom that I, the person being observed, am somehow so important that eyes from afar, people in high places, are obsessed with me and what I'm doing.
It sounds like you've dealt with a little bit of that before, Ben. I know I have.
Well,
a little narcissism / paranoia, yeah? Oh, yeah. See, Paul, too. I can feel it.
Matt, are you okay?
No, I'm not okay.
Paul, I don't... I'd like to go on record and say I don't like the way that you're looking at both of us and nodding.
But with a smile, like a genuine happy smile while we're talking about something so dark.
So that's the thing, though. This mental illness is a serious issue, and we don't mean to deride at all anyone who is suffering from it. But this belief, this paranoid belief, the government is watching my every move, used to dovetail very well with some symptoms of mental illness. And it made that person who ran up to you on the street seem like a crackpot and easily dismissed. Until, that is.
Yeah, the news came out. Like, the actual news.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And they said, "Hey, everybody, so... the government is spying on all of us."
Yeah, that was a big vindication for a lot of people.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was. And this is around the time specifically. Well, I mean, there have been smaller stories about things like Echelon and some of the other projects around the countries in the world where they discuss how, yes, there are massive surveillance programs going on.
Sure.
But when, you know, Edward Snowden came forth and said, "Guys, it's bigger than that. It's a lot more than that, and it's everybody."
You know what that hippie in Haight-Ashbury said? "I told you so."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's shut up, man. That's not helpful.
He's got some stuff to work on with himself, I think.
Yeah. And that's not the only thing.
Yeah, yeah. So this came out in increments. First, the news broke that, yes, the U.S. government was indeed spying on people, but only certain high-value targets. They're spying on Leonard Peltier in the American Indian Movement, right, who they consider a domestic terrorist. They're spying on Martin Luther King, whom they consider a destabilizing factor.
John Lennon.
They're spying on John Lennon because of his perceived left-wing beliefs.
Yeah, and with COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program, they're going through and actually doing this all, like, consistently, a lot.
And then the next big milestone is the news breaks about monitoring international communication. So only certain high-value, possibly destabilizing domestic individuals, or only international, you know, phone calls and stuff, because we want to stop terrorism. And those existed as rumors, but they became substantiated by the acknowledgement of stuff like Echelon or Five Eyes, where five Anglosphere countries agreed to pass the buck and find loopholes in their own surveillance laws, right?
So for the average American citizen, it's, okay, well, if I travel to another country, maybe I'm being looked at. Maybe if I'm a really important person in a movement somewhere, I'm being looked at.
Right. Maybe if I attended the same, you know, Democratic Socialist Party of America meeting with a celebrity or a musician, I might be on a list.
Yeah, maybe if I went to Kent State University for any reason whatsoever.
But otherwise, normal Jane or John Dosef, they don't have any appeal. Why would the feds go to the massive trouble of putting them under a microscope? It turns out, actually, yes. They do have appeal, and yes, we did attract the attention, and yes, Uncle Sam was and is monitoring you. The same technological advances that allow people to leak classified information very easily also allow domestic surveillance to extend widely, without exception. I mean, okay, virtually without exception. These surveillance techniques depend on partnerships with private businesses. Telecoms, you know, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook. What are
same they? Company.
Same company. Yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah, there we go. I needed a different one. Thank you.
Tumblr. Snapchat.
And there's legislation that was pushed through in the wake of public unease over terrorism that allowed for the first time in human history. The first time in human history allowed the majority of a population to be intimately traced should they catch the attention of the U.S. government. Right now, don't be too paranoid. We don't want to be too alarmist about this. But right now, if you somehow rose to the level where you got personal attention from the intelligence agencies in the U.S. in a very short amount of time, they could know more about you than your loved ones know about you, which is a spooky, spooky thing. And it doesn't matter whether or not you have secrets.
Yeah, it does matter if you're a liar.
Hey, man,
if your family doesn't know about you.
I see you looking at me. I'm just an enigma, dog, okay? I'm not a liar.
I was looking at your coffee cup.
I just keep it close to the vest.
Close to the chest. Man, so that's okay. So that's one thing that turned out to be absolutely true. And this is happening as we record this episode. Not for nothing have we made that running joke where I guess it's time to do it again, where we apologize to that poor hypothetical NSA intern who has to listen to this show. Hope it's going all right, man. Haven't heard from you in a while.
I think he's listening to the show or monitoring our personal phone calls.
He might be doing both. Yeah. I mean, it's tough to be an intern. He probably has like a transcript on one thing and he's listening to the audio.
He's got one earbud on one side doing one and then another on the other. Way to multitask. Do we have a name for him?
We used to call him Steve. But
Steve.
Interns turn over so quickly. I wonder if it's a new guy now.
Steve's a pretty common name, though. It could be a different guy named Steve at this point.
Yeah, maybe he has a government-assigned name, and it's just like Johnny Blank.
Maybe it's just a Russian bot now.
Maybe it is.
Can we call our intern Ricky? That way it could be male, gender
neutral,
neutral.
Whatever. Gender fluid.
Gender neutral. Yeah. Okay, Ricky. Well, we hope school is going well for you. And
spy school.
Stick with it, man. I hope your summer is going all right. Feel free to write to us, conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. On that note, there's another subgenre of what were often called conspiracy theories that turned out to be absolutely, and in this case, horrifically true. In the years of World War II, leading up to it and during the war, the American public was sold this fantastic, idealistic, shining image of what the U.S. was and what the U.S. would become. The United States, okay, everybody on Here's Where It Gets Crazy, I'm trying to hit the T.
The U.S., if you will.
People ragging you about that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm never going to live it down.
They don't like United?
It's the battle has been fought.
Is that true?
Yeah, I accept it. I think it's hilarious. No, I appreciate it.
Don't justify these monsters.
Wasn't it better though when it was YouTube commenters with just awful screen names saying it? That because it made it
like
feel
Fartman
733. Yeah.
I loved it because there would be very salient points. There would be people writing 4-paragraph essays that had fantastic perspectives. And then their names would be like Surfer Boy Booty Time 12.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's a great point. Surfer Boy Booty
Time.
There it is.
Traveler.
12. Yeah.
Booty Time Traveler. I like that. That should be like a raunchy comedy.
It's one heck of a weird pickup line.
But the
U.S. and the Allies were portrayed as inarguably the good guys, with a nation united behind them. Every red-blooded Jane and John Doseph was doing their part, whether you're at home or you're on the front, to prevent the dastardly Axis powers from sowing chaos and atrocity across Europe, North Africa, Asia, and possibly beyond. And there was propaganda that came out, propaganda aplenty, that portrayed the Axis as insanely violent powers, raping, pillaging, murdering, and even experimenting on innocent people in their possession. Of course, the weird thing about the propaganda was the racist stuff was completely inaccurate, obviously, but the propaganda about the violence was largely accurate in a very disturbing way. And by implication, what this propaganda did was say that the U.S. and the Allies were the polar opposite of Axis forces fighting for the safety and dignity of these strangers oceans away just because we're good people. Yeah. We're that decent, you know?
We're fighting for justice for all.
Now, there were a few outliers. Anti-war activists, or anyone who had the gall to suggest that the U.S. was not as clean and unbesmirched as it would have its citizens believe, they were at best dismissed. They were most often accused of being spies or traitors, and in some occasions, they were completely blackballed from their own industries, or they were persecuted by the government, up to and including criminal charges and jail time.
Or, you know, they were put into prison camps, mm-hmm. like most of the Japanese American citizens.
Right. Or they were put into asylums because they were crazy. How could you say this stuff about Uncle Sam?
Isn't he like a fictional character?
He is based on a real person.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do an episode on that. Maybe it's just a vignette. I don't know if it's a whole episode's worth.
But what actually happened, though?
Well, actually, turns out the U.S. was conducting illegal experiments on its own citizens, yes, as well as foreign populations for decades. During World War II and the years following, the government paid particularly close attention to the effects of radiation on human beings. I wonder why, Ben.
Yeah, I wonder why, Noel.
Looking to see how things might pan out in some sort of dystopian future?
Ding, ding. Give the man a cigar. Pass him an Omaha steak. You, sir, win this round. It is absolutely true. It's a good thing they volunteered, right? Kidding. They had no idea. They had no idea what was happening. They were unsuspecting. Beginning in roughly 1945, scientists working directly for the U.S. government conducted at least 30 separate programs in which they knowingly and purposefully exposed innocent U.S. citizens to life-changing, or in many cases, life-ending amounts of radiation. This is shortly after the discovery of plutonium in the early 1940s. In one case, they directly shot people up with plutonium just to see what would happen.
Didn't give them, like, superpowers instantly?
If pain is a superpower, then they were like the X-Men.
Okay.
They took 18 people who had terminal illnesses, and they said, we're going to give you experimental treatments. We may not be able to save your life, and we cannot predict the side effects. Both of those things were technically true. Mm-hmm. They said, but it may lengthen your lifespan, and this gets really dirty really quick.
But that wasn't even sort of true, the lengthening of the lifespan thing. That was just sort of like a hook.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in Deadpool.
Yeah, exactly. So what they were actually doing, they were hoping to take the information they gained, just like you had said, and use it to plan for scenarios mm-hmm. where the U.S. suffered a direct nuclear hit.
Conditions, mm-hmm. yeah.
And they also gave children and pregnant mothers food and drink riddled with irradiation. Because they said, there will be pregnant women around when the nukes hit.
Of course.
So what will happen? Let's sacrifice, you know, a handful of actual children now, with the rationale being that we're doing it so we can save kids later.
Remember that guy we talked about on the other show, Ridiculous History, had the poison squad
mm-hmm.
who purposefully ate poison contaminants in food?
Yeah.
That was volunteer.
Harvey.
Yeah, Harvey. But this is way more nefarious and terrifying.
It comes from the same mindset, though, you know? Mm-hmm. So here's... the other part. They took active soldiers that they would later send to war, and they marched them over radioactive dirt at active test sites. And then when these non-consenting patients died, with no knowledge that they were dying of radiation poisoning, the U.S. government would go back in secret and rob their graves to study their remains.
Yeah.
Including infants.
Yeah.
So we're talking digging up children, cutting off limbs, seeing what happens.
Who was doing the digging? Was it just low-level, like, office grunts?
Well, okay, so there, one thing we know about for sure is this thing called Project Sunshine.
Oh, that sounds like fun. That sounds nice.
Doesn't it? Uh-huh. Sounds wonderful. Yeah. I think it has more to do with the brightness of an atomic blast than anything else.
Or the fact that sunshine, you know, gives you cancer.
Yeah, that's very true. So in this, it was the United States Atomic Energy Commission, along with the thing that would eventually become the RAND Corporation, working together. So it was somebody employed by them, either direct employees or contract workers. And what they would do, what they wanted to do. They wanted to study the effects of strontium-90, which is the most dangerous radioactive isotope that exists as nuclear fallout. And they knew this from a previous project. And in this case, they wanted to study especially young human flesh and the effects of strontium-90. So as Ben was saying, like looking at people who they had already kind of dosed with or experimented with and then dug up their bodies. In this case, they're trying to find recently deceased bodies, specifically infants, young children, and that kind of thing. Get tissue samples and then test those samples.
Yeah.
So they would do everything from go to a morgue and take an arm of a child that had recently deceased without asking their family members, without asking anyone if they could use it, and then testing it and then disposing of it later. And they there were at least 1,500 test subjects in Project Sunshine.
Jeez.
Yeah. Or just deceased victims became.
Or pieces of them.
Yeah.
And you would say most, if not all of those came from the act of grave robbing.
It's not, a lot of it wasn't grave robbing. It was,
sneaking samples from morgues. Morgue lifting.
Yeah. There's a place you can go just really quickly. If you want to check this out on rand.org, actually you can find it. Mm-hmm. And it is Worldwide Effects of Atomic Weapons Project Sunshine, and it's dated August 6th,
1953. Oh, God. I figured out the worst phrase for this. Morgue mooching.
Oh.
Yeah. Oof, that's a rough one. On a side note with this, we find an interesting biographical tale here. It is the tale of Albert Stevens. Albert Stevens was someone who fell into the web of illegal government radiation experiments in the U.S. In 1945, he was a 58-year-old house painter. He had been told that he was suffering from terminal cancer with only months to live. The truth is that he was suffering from a severe gastric ulcer, but he had doctors tell him it was cancer. So he was admitted to the University of California, San Francisco Medical Center to treat the cancer that he did not have.
Okay.
To get cough-cough treatment, cough-cough.
What's cough-cough treatment?
Cough-cough treatment is me really pointing out that they were lying to him.
Oh, I see. Oh, I got it now. Well, I'm slow today.
You got it, man. So this guy, this poor guy, Albert, he, as he says, given a few months to live, on May 10th of that year, scientists working for Uncle Sam, pretending to treat the cancer that he did not have, secretly shot him up with the single largest amount of plutonium a human being has ever received. To the modern day, it's just under 1 microgram, and the sample had 2 different isotopes of plutonium. It was a cocktail. One of the isotopes was weakly radioactive, so still dangerous, but not an immediate death sentence. It had a half-life of 24,100 years.
Wow.
And then, yeah, and then the other highly radioactive isotope had a half-life of about 87, a little less than 88 years. He received free medical and additional testing for the rest of his life from the same group that riddled his body with radiation, and his family thought this experimental cancer treatment was working because he didn't have cancer and he lived more than a few months. In fact, he lived 21 years suffering the effects of this cartoonish amount of plutonium that stayed in his system, in his bones, in his skin, in his organs. His spine was degrading at a horrific rate. His eyes were fighting a losing battle with cataracts, and he was still there with the doctors who were cough-cough treating him, and they conducted operations while he was alive to remove parts of his organs to see what was happening to them. He took his spleen, parts of his liver, his pancreas, his lymph nodes. His family the whole time is saying, wow, it's amazing that you have survived cancer. Thank you for this experimental treatment. He died 21 years later on January 9th, 1966, of a heart attack. So during those 21 years he was alive, he received more radiation than any other living human being, 60 times the government's maximum safe lifetime exposure threshold, which turns out is a real thing.
Yeah.
And now it feels like a ticking clock every time you have to go through the airport security line or use a microwave.
Wow.
Or get an x-ray.
Yeah. So it's a ton of radiation that this gentleman had pumped into his body. And here's the thing. We've been talking about all these radiation experiments, but we're about to get into something that is a very different kind of horror. And we're going to get into that after a quick word from our sponsor.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Boo!
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We're back. We hope you had an enjoyable break.
We did.
Yeah, we had to take a second to reset because this is the darkest part of today's episode. Like, the scene in Willy Wonka where everything gets very spooky and terrifying and disturbing as the boat goes through the tunnel. This is the dark tunnel of the show, and it's unfortunately a serious thing. There was, for a long time, a conspiracy theory roundly dismissed throughout the United Kingdom and Europe as a whole. And for decades, people like David Icke, musicians like Johnny Rotten, and various former members of Britain's entertainment industry or even its government alluded to this conspiracy, and they were ignored. They were roundly ignored. Depending on their social standing, they were simply dismissed or they were ridiculed. And the conspiracy was this, that there was an active, ongoing child abuse network in the UK, and furthermore, that members of the entertainment industry and the government, the people with their hands at the levers of power, were colluding to cover this up, not to cover it up and stop it, but to stop people from reporting it as it continued.
Yeah.
So these people who alluded to this, many of them were convinced that there was this child abuse network and that it was being actively covered up. Some of them, like David Icke, were dismissed as crackpots, or Johnny Rotten was dismissed sometimes as their version of an internet troll, just intentionally poking the bear, attempting to be edgy through making controversial statements.
From the Sex Pistols?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple of interviews where he would hint at knowing people high up in the entertainment industry.
Oh, yeah. John Lydon is his name.
Mm, yes.
Yes. Right. When you originally said Johnny Rotten, I thought maybe this was like a screen name or something, but I didn't realize it was his actual the Johnny Rotten.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I didn't know this part of his story.
Yeah. And the same dismissal went for people who alleged their careers had been threatened, not just in the entertainment industry, but in law enforcement as well, when they attempted to blow the whistle on what they saw as an intergenerational cycle of crime. The people named as criminals and frankly monsters in this situation included numerous MPs, government officials, aristocrats, perhaps most notoriously the one that we know about in the U.S., the very creepy children's entertainer and DJ, the late Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, I like this story.
Just to point out here, members of parliament, as MPs, just in case.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know why that just came to mind.
That's a good point.
I was thinking military police in my head for a moment, and I was like, no, silly.
Parliament Funkadelic?
Yes. Okay. Members of Parliament Funkadelic, also make laws in the
laws
United Kingdom.
Of funk.
Is there a Venn diagram here? Yeah, I think it's good to point that out because remember, we thought everyone knew about Mad Lib.
I know. Now I'm paranoid about everything. Oh,
you didn't get him at the book fair, you guys? I mean, I don't know. We can't assume that everyone had the same upbringing.
Right.
We did. We all kind of grew up in this part of the neck of the woods. So mm-hmm. I don't even know. Do they have Scholastic book fairs everywhere else in the country? I don't know.
Everywhere.
Really?
Yep.
It was like a touring thing. They had like road cases full of these books.
Yeah. What they didn't have everywhere is Jimmy Savile dancing around on stage, talking to children and being completely not creepy.
Top of the pops, right? I believe it was. Yeah. So here's what actually happened. Here's what gave truth to what was dismissed as a conspiracy theory, sometimes so vehemently that it ruined people's careers if they said they thought any part of it was true. As several of these people were universally men, passed away after they were dead, this is important, after they were beyond the bounds of mortal judgment or a human legal system, the press was finally allowed to admit, oh, yes, turns out that is true. People like Jimmy Savile and Cyril Smith were admitted and proven to be serial abusers and quite prolific. Jimmy Savile, in particular, was not just sexually assaulting children. He was also purposefully targeting disabled children. And to add a little bit of morbid icing on the cake here, there's pretty compelling evidence that he was sexually assaulting corpses as well. At one of the hospitals that he was, I think, on the board of.
Is there any sense that he had, like, people colluding with him on this? Or was he? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
If not actively participating in these things with him.
Just looking the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're probably not going to go into a ton of the details about these guys. I think that's as detailed as we'll get as far as what they did. But if you have the stomach for it and you want to know what a real monster is like, we were discussing off mic Cyril Smith and stuff that he was known to be doing after the fact. So you can look it up if you wish, but we're probably not going to discuss it here.
Right. So we bring this up, and this is very heavy stuff, because it is important for this to be separated from that dismissive realm of conspiracy theory.
Yes.
Okay, David Icke has said a lot of things that cannot be proven true. It turns out, you can call it a, you can call it that thing where maybe a broken clock is right twice a day or something like that. Call it whatever you want. It turns out that this cover-up, at least partially, is absolutely true. This is conspiracy fact, at least in the broad strokes of the claims and accusations. These powerful men were literally getting away with incredibly violent, reprehensible crimes with the knowing and continual support of facets of the UK government.
And now, you might ask, like, why?
Why?
Knowing, how did the government know about that? You have to remember, a lot of this is either an MP, a part of the government, or somebody like Jimmy Savile, who is working directly for the government through the British Broadcasting Corporation.
And hobnobbing with the aristocracy.
Yes.
Receiving commendations aplenty. So we do have to acknowledge that while the broad strokes of this are true, the rumors went even further and continued to do so, claiming that there might be some sort of occult aspect to these crimes, claiming that absolutely everyone was involved or is involved, and we don't know. We don't have proof of that. But what we do have proof of is that numerous files implicating living, retired members of the UK government, some of whom may have passed away by now, have gone missing. And despite multiple calls for investigation from the British public and some less cynical government officials who are trying to do right by their constituents, this series of events seems set to play out like the notorious Dutroux affair in Belgium, which is troublingly similar.
Yeah. And wow. And we have to remember that it's also here, even in the U.S., not so much at a federal government level, something like this occurring. But in 1988, something similar did happen in Omaha, Nebraska, where there was a community federal credit union that was raided by federal agents. And it was found out that there was this guy named Lawrence E. Larry King, who was behind some serious things. There were allegations of child sex trafficking and prostitution and rape and all kinds of things with boys, young boys, that came out as an actual occurrence here within the United States. These kinds of things have happened over the years. And we just have to keep in mind that it's not always a conspiracy theory.
Right. And we have to also be respectful of the victims involved, whether those are the direct victims of the crimes or the people who are somehow punished for bringing that stuff to light when it was occurring.
Even the people that get slandered on the sidelines that actually don't have anything to do with it, but they get caught up in maybe the larger parts or the fringes of the theory.
Because this is the kind of red meat that sells in tabloids, you know? So a news organization or a tabloid entertainment outfit would be incentivized to report this kind of stuff.
Well, look at this stuff with the Vatican that's been trickling out over the past few years. And we recently had the Pope, the Papa, come out and apologize for standing behind one of these archbishops that had, like, clearly covered up a lot of these sex crimes by, priests. And he, the current Pope came out and said, hey, I made a mistake. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And talk about a conspiracy. I mean, like, that's something that's been going back generations. And it's just been covered up and covered up. And now finally, in the wake of everything that's going on with all these sex abuse criminals being brought to justice or at least brought to light, it's critical mass, you know? And then you also have this Pope that's a little bit more human than we're used to and will come out and own up to this stuff. It's interesting to see.
It really is.
And we can only hope. We can only hope that substantive change comes out about this. But for the case of the UK cover-ups, the scariest part of the story is how much we don't know. We do not know if it stopped. We do not know if it continues today. We do not know who's involved, how they might be connected, or what people in the UK can do to try and prevent children in their country from falling into the clutches of this kind of thing if it's still happening. Again, it would be unfair for us to say it's definitely still happening. We don't know because all the reports about it keep disappearing.
Yeah.
But we can't end on that note.
Nope. Please
don't. I know
we're
going a little long, but we can't end completely on that note. Maybe we can talk about a mad science conspiracy theory that turned out to be true.
That sounds fun.
But is it government related?
It is.
Okay. Well, then let's do it.
Okay. Okay. We'll do one more.
Matt will allow it.
Thank you, Matt. Here's the gist. It sounded like something straight out of a dime store fiction novel. A brilliant, super villainous organization uses the weather patterns of Earth itself as a weapon. For years, let's go back to that man on the street situation that Matt brought up earlier. For years, people would have situations where someone runs up to them and is like, man, you know what they're doing up there in Alaska? Up at that harp? They're changing the weather, man. Global warming is made by Uncle Sam.
Consistently.
Tornadoes come from harp.
Weaponized hurricanes.
It's a twister.
It turns out that...
Hey, wait, are they making hurricanes too?
They're making hurricanes too, hurricanes? I tell you.
That's right.
So, let's throw in a British guy so it doesn't seem like we're just ragging on the South.
Yeah.
We're Southern. We can't do that.
Well, we can. That's exactly why we can.
You think so?
I think so.
Hey, did you hear they're making blizzards too?
There we go.
Sick of all these blizzards.
Blizzards everywhere.
I'm walking here.
I'm up here in New York City.
Oh, we're losing. We're like, listeners are dropping off.
No. Now let me like ask flies. You this.
Hey.
Have you heard of harp?
Harp, hey.
They're changing the weather like a mad bastard.
Oh, yeah.
It's a delicious beverage, harp.
So hopefully we didn't rag on the South too much, but it was a very popular thing, often dismissed as a conspiracy theory, if not harp specifically, the idea of weather modification. People were dismissed as total tinfoil hat nut jobs, and the mass media would say, no one can control the weather, you guys. What's next? Do they think we're being literal when we say it's raining cats and dogs? Back to you, Janice. They were dismissed, but it turns out, actually, while there is no solid proof that harp ever was intentionally affecting the weather, and a lot of harp stuff is not, once you dig into the files, it's not near as mysterious or sexy as you might think it is. Still pretty vague, admittedly.
Mm-hmm.
But if we bracket harp out of there, there's absolutely proof that multiple governments, not just the U.S., also notably China, have experimented with weather and continue to experiment with it, both as an agricultural tool and as a weapon. And guess which one our country used it for? Just, you know, I mean, you guys already know.
What are you talking about? The rainmaking supervillain?
Yeah, well, that's one. But the U.S. government in Vietnam used weather as a weapon to combat communist forces.
Oh, okay, cool. Because we know another story about a guy who tried to save San Diego from a drought and claimed that he could manipulate the weather by shooting this like special cocktail of chemicals up into the clouds that he had devised. And supposedly it worked so well that it flooded the reservoir and caused thousands of dollars of damages. And they ran the guy out of town on a rail and he, you know, didn't get paid.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
He did the work, though.
He did do the work. But then wasn't there a thing, too, where like this was used, cloud seeding technology was used like as a kind of a firework display at the Olympics.
Well, to prevent winter weather coming into Moscow a couple times, and a couple other places.
It's Beijing been used as well.
Sochi. Yeah.
Well, for some reason, I thought I read that it was like used as part of the like some sort of like big showy display.
That's interesting. I mean, the thing is, weather modification technology, specifically cloud seeding, which is the most well-known form of this technology. We still don't know exactly what it is capable of. Just like all the mad scientists from those previously mentioned dime store sci-fi novels, we're messing with things we don't understand. Maybe there are some things man was not meant to do. Maybe we spend so much time asking ourselves if we could do something that we skip the part where we ask ourselves whether we should do a thing.
Just a quick aside. China did spend apparently $30 million to make it rain in advance of the opening ceremony for the lift.
2008, right?
That's right. Yes, exactly. And that's the one I had.
Oh, yeah.
I was misunderstanding it. I knew it had to do with the opening ceremonies, but they were literally trying to control the weather so that it would rain earlier. And not when they wanted it to look nice and pretty.
So
nice.
Still have the rain, just change the schedule.
Exactly. But it's controversial. And they used salt and mineral-filled bullets they shot in the sky, much like our rain-making supervillain in San Diego.
They used cannons specifically, yeah. And China still has a weather modification bureau. They're much more transparent about it than the U.S. ever was. So kudos to them. They're also arguably largely using that as an agricultural technology. We used it as a weapon, hoping to trigger mudslides, disrupt trading, communication, and transit routes during the Vietnam War conflicts in Southeast Asia. Right now, as we're recording this, both of these countries can reproduce these effects today at any given time. All they need is a place to set up the sky guns, the weather guns, and then they can let it roll. But the problem is this. You might ask yourself, well, if they can do that, why are we having so many reports of catastrophic climate-related events occurring? The thing is, both of these countries can mess with the controls of the world's global weather system to a small degree, but neither of them can control the consequences of what happens. Because Don't think of the weather like a string that you can pull that leads to a cloud that makes rain when you pull the string. Instead, it's a lot more like a web. And you pull a piece of the web, you affect the rest of it.
Yeah, we also can't control any of the large mechanisms like the airflow around the Earth. We can't affect how the northerlies are going to be affected. We can't do anything like that. Currently, at least what we know about is just adding moisture or taking it away, essentially.
Yeah, and we don't know how that affects things. Like, so with the case that Noel just mentioned earlier with Charles Mallory Hatfield out in San Diego, the same thing happened. We can create the effect, but we have no means of controlling it. So imagine that you have this tremendously power. Like, okay, let's think of it this way. Let's say you have a gigantic plane. And you can do two things with the plane. You can make it so that it never flies, or you can start it and you can get it up in the air. Once it's in the air, the controls don't work. You don't know what's going to happen. It goes where it wants. It crashes. It can drop a bomb. Who knows? It hits another plane. Who knows? And that may be one of the primary reasons that we don't see more weather modification happening now, because the technology is, the basis of it is pretty easy to understand, so other governments can do it. There are a couple of international agreements where people say, okay, we're not going to use the weather as a weapon, but
it's not an exact science though, right? It's kind of rolling the dice. Like, there's a lot of factors in play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're making the initial, you know, shot, but after that, it's out of your hands. It's in God's hands, as they say.
Yeah, you can't. You have no control, right? And this is just one example of a conspiracy theory based in science that turned out to be absolutely true. At this point, we are scratching the surface. We hope while you're listening, you have taken note of other things that were once portrayed as conspiracy theories that turned out to be absolutely true. If that is the case, we'd like to hear from you. What events or phenomena have you found to be at least partially true? It doesn't have to be all the way true, because as we know, rumors accrete. They grow exponentially. But have you found anything that people thought was utter hogwash that had a pearl amid the swine of deception or misinformation? Also, one thing, what do you guys think about doing some thank yous at the end, some credits at the end?
Sure.
Well, first, thank you very much, Paul. Mission critical, is that for this episode?
Big crit.
Mm-hmm. Big crit. Yes, no?
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
He's tuned out.
Thanks so much to super producer Paul. Thank you very much to our the person who does our write-ups for our podcast, Diana Brown. Every time we have a podcast come out, you can find on How Stuff Works a quick summation of what's happening. You know, if you want to share it around with your friends, please do so.
Thanks to Sarah Gleim, who takes care of a lot of that work for us too, working with Diane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And especially, most importantly, thank you to you. And thank you to the folks who have joined Here's Where It Gets Crazy in mass. We were talking about this earlier today.
They've been just rolling in.
Yes.
Like little doggies, like little badgers, but good badgers. Badgers of kindness and friendship.
Yeah, we appreciate you hanging out with us over there. We will be on there periodically to discuss things, post things. We'll be looking at your posts for sure. So join us. Tell your friends.
Keep your nose clean or we'll ban you.
Yes. We might.
Just, no hate speech.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Just don't be a jerk. Yeah, like, discuss things, just don't be a jerk.
Where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And Instagram. We are Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook and Twitter. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can go to stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com and check out every podcast we've ever done, some videos, some other things.
Videos.
You can call us.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.